Stay golden.
Hurricane. Hello and welcome back to the Golden Hurricast. We are a podcast that covers Golden Hurricane Athletics at the University of Tulsa. If you're not a frequent listener, usually I've got a weekly in there, but it is officially summertime slash our hiatus time where we kind of take the summer off and relax for a little bit before we gear up again for football season. So we are now just a standard podcast that sometimes puts out episodes, but come football season, have no fear, we will be weekly once again. Anyway, I am Ryan Token.
And I'm Matt Rectane. And that's kind of, I feel like I always make a note on the weekly thing when it hasn't been a weekly cadence, but you beat me. So, but we got a big, like Ryan was saying, we only release episodes, you know, every, like when stuff kind of happens, and this is a big one. We thought it was the final time that Rick Dixon was going to be a guest on the podcast. That's probably not true. I kind of imagine we'll have him, you know, if not once a year, every now and then, just because we love talking to him. But, you know, we've got Rick on for the fifth time, so which is kind of wild. I think it's the fifth time in the last 3 years.
Yeah.
And yeah, we talk about, you know, his retirement because, you know, that's huge news that honestly, so I was just telling Ryan before this, I was camping last weekend. And so I had seen the DT news that he was retiring. And I was like, oh man, that's, you know, it's a bummer because he's awesome. I got to work with him personally when I was at TU, but, you know, then I came back and I was like, Rick also retired. Like that yeah. Caught me like by surprise. But you know, I feel like we got him for 3 years, which is probably 2.5 years longer, than he was expecting when he first came on, you know, back in 2020. So, that being said, we talk about his retirement. We talk about the blue and gold, weekend. That's this weekend, Friday and Saturday. And then we take on some listener questions. So it's really cool. Ryan, did I miss anything?
No, not really. But yeah, got a second. It was an awesome episode. Definitely went into this episode before we started recording or getting on the call with him, thinking it would be the last time we talked to him. And he was pretty quick to squash that. So I hope that's true. We'll have him on as often as he wants to come on. He is always great to talk to. A lot of good info. We talk about NIL stuff also, transfer portal, the next AD, who that might be, what we should look for there, all kinds of stuff, practice facility, baseball, etc. Really fun. We got him for a good long time again. He did have to leave, so we had to cut it a little bit short. Didn't get to all the listener questions, but that was expected. So thanks to everybody for sending those in. Really appreciate it. But yeah, let's get to it. The whole episode is just going to be the interview with him, and then we'll catch you at the end and close this out. All right, and we are here with Tulsa Athletic Director Rick Dixon. Today's going to be a bittersweet one, I thought, because it is Rick's fifth time on the show, which one is fantastic. But I thought this might be his last time on the show, but we were just about to start recording here, and Rick said, no, I'm gonna keep coming on after the retirement is official and everything.
Yeah.
And spoiler alert, if you haven't seen already, Rick has recently announced his retirement as Tulsa's athletic director after 32 years as an AD and 2 4-year stints as Tulsa's AD. So quite a career there. We've got TU's Hall of Fame weekend coming up this weekend. We'll certainly go talk about that, but got to start with a few retirement questions. Rick, first, congrats. 32 years as an AD, heck of a run, starting and ending your career at the same place you were born, same place you played football, downright poetic, if you ask me. Congratulations on an incredible career. How are you feeling about everything now?
Oh gosh. You know, I'll probably have a little more, recollection time and reminiscing, here in about 9 weeks when I'm done. Pretty much a full out sprint. You know, I would say to people, all those 32 years, I never learned how effectively to retire and go out gracefully. I guess here I am, probably my toughest quarter of the year, and I'm still here. Even though I announced my retirement, I never figured out how to do that. correctly, maybe in the next life. But no, it feels great. It feels wonderful. A little bit different than when I did it in 2017, and just for different reasons. But I think the key one being that Brenda and I, you know, came and did something that we really had no intent to or ambition to or anything else, and to do it and it turned into what it was in 45 months when we actually really struggled quite a bit to even commit to doing the initial 9 months, which is what we were asked to do, and then what it became, which was just a little longer and deeper makeover than we anticipated, but feel really good, really satisfied, really content, and kind of melancholy about the fact that, you know what, that now looking back at it as it almost over, to think that what started, you know, here that long ago is ending right here as well. Pretty, you know, that as you said, poetic, you know, because that doesn't typically happen.
Yeah, it certainly doesn't. And I know we, you know, you mentioned it before we started recording, but just for the record, what do you know when your final official day is going to be, or is that a little squishy, or how's that look?
No, we've Brad and I have sat and talked. You know, I mentioned to him probably close to the end of the first term that, you know, I do feel good. We're kind of reviewing where things were, you know, what our progress was, what still needed to be worked on. And kind of ended it with, so I think that it's more likely than not that at the end of this year that we would, that would probably be it for us. And I said, let me get back to you in the spring, which I did about a month ago. And I said, yeah, I think that's the right timing, for us. And hopefully it is for TU. And that's where we end up selecting that date of April 19th, you know, I'm very focused on finishing up strong, because that really what happens in these next 8-9 weeks secures the stability of next year and all the different funds and the case fund and the hurricane impact and our GHC, all those things that our programs are so dependent. I want to walk away knowing that they're in good stead. And it also gives them, you know, unlike before where I came up as an interim, the fact that I'm still here, they won't have to do that. So it'll give them 10, 11 weeks to identify and secure the next person and make that transition. And I would think there'd be a small gap time between when that person comes and when we finish.
Yeah. And I want to ask you about the next AD, and we can get there now maybe with that transition. How involved are you in that process? Do you suggest people that, you know, you have in mind, or do you leave that totally up to President Carson and the search firm and the university?
Yeah, I think I've just learned that's you know, I'm made it clear to Brad, obviously, and to the others, that I'm, you know, I'm available as a resource. I don't think it's, you know, they're going to live with them, not me. And so I think that them having ownership, I can be used as a, you know, a resource. If asked, in terms of, you know, just reacting to anybody they'd be considering, probably have a pretty good sense and feel, probably don't so much on the next generation of who's out there. I think the appropriate way is, you know, to be available, to be a resource, but not lead it. Like if I was doing a coaching search or something else.
Yeah, of course. That makes sense. Do you have any, just, you know, your own personal opinions of what, not a person individually, but the kind of person that TU should target? I know that you've been very big on trying to regain that connection between student athletes at TU and try to get back in the community and get the community more involved in the city and things like that. Is that where you think the focus should lie with the next one as well? Or do you think the focus shifts, or how are you feeling about that?
Well, guys, there's so many, I've been doing it so long, and even within my own tree of 12, whatever the number is now, 12 or 13 that are out there, there's, even within my group, my family, there's a whole variety of personalities and skill sets. So the key, obviously, is getting, identifying the right skill set for here, so that can come in any size, shape, age, or color. And And I think there'll be a lot of good candidates. I think we're in a good place. I think that that's kind of out there and known nationally, at least in the industry. And so it's always had a great reputation, and would tell you, and that I think people in the industry kind of sense the upsurge and uptick that we've been on. And that's usually what you look for when you're, if people that are in the industry looking to make a move, those are the things you do. Can I, just like a coach, can I succeed there? Mm-hmm. And so then it becomes a function of matching up skill sets with the needs. And, you know, to that end, I think, and I've made a point in every one of my coaching searches saying that to all of them, is can't succeed at the University of Tulsa and in this community if you stay inside four walls. And that's without question, you know, a paramount aspect of this for whoever comes, is this city has remarkable bandwidth. Our university, our alma mater, has great history with it. If you look at when we were over history, when we were most intertwined, seems to coincide with our greatest periods of success. So I think therein for me has always lied the, you know, the code or the secret sauce as to what, how it works. And it's finding people, coaches, staff that understand that, get that, and more importantly, embrace it. And I would see the same thing with any athletic director candidate.
Yeah, agreed. It feels like that has to be the key. I like your quote there on can't stay inside four walls. It's to you. You've got to get out there. And, you know, you can't just do it all yourself. And you're going to have some dependence on the city and the community to be there too. So yeah, that's pretty good. Thinking about your career for just a little bit longer before we move on to some Hall of Fame weekend stuff. You know, you talked about the two stints. You started off your career here in 90 to 94. Maybe I'm remembering that wrong. It was somewhere in those.
Yeah, I think we might have even put it out wrong because I haven't seen the release. but I know I came to TU in August of 88. And by, I think, May, that spring of 89, I'd become interim AD. And then maybe the following spring, after being interim for a year, they did the permanent search, because we also, during that period, we're going through presidential transition. We lost Pascal Twyman, and then his successor, Dr. Mike Davis, who actually hired me to come over as an associate AD and become interim president. He passed. Then there was an interim, and it was during that period of TU's history that I went from interim to permanent. I just know I showed up on campus in August of 88 and left in the April of 94. So
yeah,
had a lot of titles, a lot of hats during that first go round.
Yeah. And it sounded like they needed somebody like you at that point too. A lot of instability then, a lot of instability for your second, when you came into your second term too. And that's kind of the gist of my main question here is, how does that first stint, when you look back at the first stint as TU's AD, compare to this latest one where you're ending your career?
Well, here's what I can say to folks. They certainly had a more experienced AD this go around than the first one.
Yeah.
Because I think I came at 32, became interim at 33. And so, you know, and as people that were around during that time or alive during that time would know, didn't have really reported to a vice president initially. The athletic director, as I was coming in, had announced or resigned. So kind of had to learn on the job, didn't have a lot of prepping or mentoring. But as it turned out, I think some of the things I'd done, besides having coached, been an athlete, knowing athletic culture, and then in this instance, knowing TU's athletic culture, having been part of it, I think that was certainly an asset for me. Turned out that the skill sets I developed in running my own business and a retail business at that, kind of a lot of skills developed there that I learned after the fact that were transitional, you know, just managing people, managing budgets, buying and selling, marketing, promoting, and most importantly, customer service, all those things applied in this arena as well. And it allowed me to, you know, time, I guess my own naivety and qualities of being, fearless and relentless. That's what I always pass on to young people asking me you know, the key to careers. And I said, you know, whatever it is you do and step into, do it in a way that that's characterized by that those two things, because it allows you, if you're not afraid of failure, it allows you to grow. And that really, for me, that was the key, is that I think I was humble enough to recognize that I didn't know a lot of what I didn't know, and but be open and receptive to people. I have to share this story at lunch today with somebody that asked me, you know, one of my first trips ever, I think that fall of 89, I went out to Tucson, Arizona for a Division I AD's summit meeting. And so all the heavyweights of the time, Frank Broyles, Doug Dickey, you know, Pete Dallas of UCLA, folks like that. And I remember our first outing that Sunday afternoon, we'd played a home game and Tulsa flew out to Phoenix probably and drove down to Tucson. So they take us to a golf course, and I had to borrow some golf clubs from Dale McNamara because I didn't own any, put my bag on a cart with the name on it. It was next to Doug Dickey, the AD at Tennessee. And first Frank Boyles walked up because they were in our foursome and the cart behind us and handed me the bag. And so I kind of looked at him and I said, well, sure, I'll put it on your cart there, and strapped it in. And right behind him came Doug Dickey on our cart. And I did the same for him. And then they all got in their carts. I think the other gentleman was Paul Roach, who was AD and head football coach at Wyoming. And I get in the car. Now, they were about my age today. And here I am, 33. I jump in the cart with Doug Dickey, and he asked me, well, what are you doing? I said, well, I'm your fourth. And they said, hell, we thought you were the bag boy. So, very nice. But you know what? Those guys like that and many more were very giving and helpful, you know, for just mentoring and being open to advice and being a resource. And I was, you know, not afraid and humble enough to ask and lean on them for things I hadn't dealt with or seen, or pick their brains, do those type of things. And that helped a lot.
Yeah. I mean, it seems the more, you know, I've heard you talk about stuff like this before and, you know, and plenty of others. And it sounds to me the gist I get on like what makes a successful career, like how to have a successful career, if there is a formula for it, is hard work and equally as important consistency and like showing up, you know, and not like, you know, challenges come, don't fade from the challenge and ask questions when they come up. Those people that like, that seems to be the general word of advice across the board, like stick with it.
I think so.
And see what happens, you know, and don't be afraid of failure. And, you know, you've certainly mm-hmm. done that. I know you talked about Katrina plenty and like having to deal with that as Tulane's AD and getting them to recover mm-hmm. from that. Probably an easy thing to shy away from if you wanted to, you know, not many ADs probably would want to deal with that. And, you know, people are there doing it. You were one of them. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, really, really, really fortunate and blessed. You know, I look back, I said that Friday was kind of a bittersweet but wonderful day for me to get to announce first to our coaches and staff Friday morning, just before we scheduled a kind of an appreciation picnic for all of our student athletes and pathway students, which is almost 600 now that it's grown to, and just to get to see them and then announce that to them myself, thank them for, you know, this remarkable kind of surreal unscripted journey that Brenda and I have been on, and to get to do it with them and here was just, you know, kind of a blessing that I never even thought would materialize, or the need for it. And as I said, you know what, to wake up every day and know that that them and their challenges gave us purpose. And so that's really, I mean, you think about it, that's, if you know you're getting up every day and making a difference and for something worthwhile, you know, that's, you can, to all folks out there, if you can look back at the end of careers and say that, I mean, I think that's pretty fulfilling. It sure has been for us.
Yep, no question. And let's get to a similar question that I know you've been asked probably a billion times already at this point, but a bunch of our listeners were asking it too. So going to throw it to you. When you look back on your career, what are you most proud of? And I mean the entire career, not just Tulsa, but Washington State, Tulane.
Yeah.
Anything that comes to mind. What do you look back on with the most pride?
I don't think I could say any one thing. And I, here's what for certain I want to, you know, pass along to folks. And I said this Friday to the kids, like, I never, you know, any of the things that a lot of times get written and printed about people in these roles, very few of them that I ever aspire, you know, to have written about me. A lot of these things happened. You know, I built a football stadium, a baseball stadium, renovated arenas, built an indoor practice facility in the Northwest, got to be part of, I don't know how many bowl teams or Elite Eight or Final Four volleyball team or national championship rowing team or golf team or all those things occurred during my tenures. I didn't accomplish any of them. That wasn't, you know, I didn't swing a bat or throw a ball or row a boat, you know, or build facilities. I was kind of, you know, donors did those things. Student athletes and coaches did those accomplishments. My role was to lead, guide, and support. And I did that. And included in that is giving them resources and tools, those things. So I never define, for me, any of those things aren't, for me personally, defining points in our career. Some of those things you mentioned, like leading Tulane through a really dark, tough period when I first got there of, should we be Division III? Should we drop football? Should we give up on sports, to becoming a vibrant program? And then 2 years later, having to start over again, and a decade later, looking back and say, oh yeah, we did this. You know, we overcame that, that adversity that no one had ever faced and hopefully never does again. But most importantly for me, here's what I would say. I said, there are kids. My greatest satisfaction and reward in all this, and I said, looking out at the 470 PU kids, is I knew every day, first of all, you called me Rick. I always insisted that wherever I was, Mr. Dixon was my father. I've always been Rick, and every, you know, at every stop I've been, that's who I'm known as and referred to by student athletes. They know that I was there to guide them, there to protect them, and there to support them. And I said, looking into your faces, I know that you feel that way, and that's enough.
Very nice. Yeah. I mean, stuff like that matters. I think you're underselling yourself a little bit when you say that you didn't have, you know, you weren't swinging a bat, you weren't throwing the ball, things like that. But obviously there's a lot there behind the scenes going on that, you know, having a not good AD results in those things not happening, you know, those championships not happening, the Elite Eight's not getting there. Don't undersell yourself there. What about change? You know, when you look back, anything obvious come to mind on something you would do obviously differently or not? Are you pretty happy with all the changes?
You know, it's funny you ask that. I used to, especially in my Tulane years, as it got close to the end, and as it was, I mean, think of taking on, and I consciously had to make this decision a couple times after the 2005 hurricane, and looking at a decade of rebuilding, and had in particular two significant opportunities of high, you know, the highest level opportunities to go make, you know, probably undeserving money, undeserving security and benefits and those things and prestige that go along with those. That in probably had more than that, but in two particular instances that I actually signed contracts and then had to backtrack because my heart wouldn't let me walk away from a disaster. And my heart, and of course my adorable life partner of 43 years now, telling me, like, what are you doing? You know, at the end, when I was nauseous and couldn't figure my way out, she would say, so what are you doing here? Let's see. You've been here this many years, done a great job. You got them through a disaster. now they're flat on your back and you're going to walk away. And I'd look at her like, really? I mean, you've had a month to tell me this. She goes, well, I had to wait for you to figure it out. But I couldn't do that. And I'd say to you two young married guys, having someone like that alongside you, that's the key to it. But just a lot of satisfaction, I think, and pride about being, you know, those people that could face that kind of challenge and adversities and persevere and get others to follow and all of us arrive in a safe place. Those are, you know, for me, those are, look, define me that way. I'm okay with that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's fantastic. And just today I heard a phrase, regarding job searches and such, and it was go or stay where you're celebrated, not tolerated. Right. And they were talking about it in the context of people like Jerome Tang at Kansas State right now, who was very strongly linked to the Arkansas job. And then John Calipari on the flip side is not very, he's not even on the tolerated side necessarily at Kentucky right now. And he's going somewhere where he's definitely celebrated at Arkansas.
Right.
And then with Tang, it's, you know, he is clearly celebrated at Kansas State. Going to somewhere like Arkansas, yeah, you'd be celebrated for a little bit, but it's much less clear. So stay where you're celebrated, you know, and places like that, it does matter. And I think, I with what you're saying there, it totally jives. I totally see what you're saying.
So here's just to put a bow on that discussion. So here's how it always worked for us. So on the front end, maybe not so much my initial, because other than people that knew me and followed TU, from the athletic side, did even people know who I was when I was hired the first time. But I can tell you with certainty that in all the instances that I went into new opportunities, can remember, because I was right in the center of it, of all the hoopla and celebration about me coming, I can just tell you this for a fact. Each time, including this one, everybody's been very gracious and nice. And, oh, thanks, Rick. Great having you and so forth. But does Brenda have to go? So she's like 4 for 4 on the, I get celebrated, but she gets missed and remembered and people long for, her part of this journey as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good point. That is nice. All right. Cool. That's good stuff. Let's keep it rolling. I know we're on a kind of a tight timeline ish. Relative to our other episodes.
Yeah. This isn't the farewell. So we got more visits to come.
So let's get kind of another broad question and maybe the last one really before we move on to Hall of Fame weekend stuff. But there's a lot of stuff going on. Every school right now, especially schools like Tulsa, small schools like that, face a lot of uncertainty. That might be always the case, but it certainly feels pointed right now. NIL landscape constantly changing. Transfer portal seems to disproportionately hurt small schools like TU. Now there's talks of an 80 league super league, which would leave out the vast majority of the G5. Just yesterday I saw there's heated up conversations about a G5 only playoff, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So a lot of, potential headwinds coming forward.
Yeah.
When you think about that, and I know you won't be necessarily the one to tackle that for TU in the future, but when you think about things like that and you think about Tulsa, how do you think TU fares going forward? Or is it there's just too much change to know?
Yeah, it's still kind of in that churn mode of, the washing machine, a lot of suds and hot water and swirling going on, and that probably will continue for some time, but I do think it's moving. I haven't heard, directly in most of my conversations, either happening now within our league and our folks, but also my tree that's out there, and a lot of them at those prominent higher resource programs. Then most of what I've been hearing, it's been pretty consistent, is this not so much. I don't know. I think people are a little too, and that understandably so, married to the idea of conferences. I don't know that conferences will survive in that structure. It's just, remember, that's always been part of how we organized ourselves within this big tent top called the NCAA. I don't see that surviving. It's been litigated to the point that it has no influence, no impetus. Right now, the only thing they're doing reasonably well or successfully is hosting championships for us. Yeah. They're not governing at all. And it's as the former executive director, CEO Mark Emmert said on the way out, you need to reform and reboot, because every time we walk into a court, which is every couple of weeks these days, we've already, with the NCAA logo on the briefcases, we've already lost. It's not a matter of win or lose. It's a matter of how much the damages will be. So it can't continue in that state and under that tent top. And I really see now, if you, hard as that is to think, because it's all we know, is if you push that concept aside of a governing body that's not going to exist, and they've organized it into conferences for decades, is I really see this kind of dividing. And at the top, really a very small layer. I really have a struggle, and a lot, most of the folks I talk to, of identifying more than 30. It may fluctuate somewhat, but it's really when you kind of look at the criteria and litmus tests that they apply to themselves, the biggest brand, then maybe you can come up with 30 of them that are considered blue blood or iconic. There's a lot on the fringe that, you know, want to buy their way into certain levels, but you can't. Those aren't necessarily tied to resources. It's history, tradition, success, right? And the reason I say that is their objective in all this is to get the greatest return. And they can't do that even within the conferences that exist. If you look at the two that everybody's migrated to in the last 2 or 3 years, that's to me the group where a good portion of that 30, maybe 2/3, will transition out, maybe add a few on the fringe that have similar profiles to them. And let's say that number was 30 or 32 or 36, then go to the marketplace and directly contract, with a different, create their own direct media rights that are only shared with equals. In other words, you know, an NFL light, NBA light, yep. And then where you're located, all those things become secondary, right? Because just like the NFL, you can have markets around the country, and you'll divide geographically, but operate as one league. And now you're not required or expected or contracted to generate or provide or share resources with others that you don't think meet your own level and criteria. And then that leaves, you know, a good portion left of the FBS 131 schools. I see anywhere between, you know, somewhere in the 90s left to decide what's next. Are we going to go try to emulate that and be a AA version of them? Or are we going to reboot and maybe try to relaunch something and get congressional buy-in, court litigation buy-in on the front end of saying, we really want to create a sustainable amateur model. Here's our window and chance to do it. Mm-hmm. Now tell us, not by litigation, but tell us, you know, in advance what passes muster for being an amateur model today. But I just don't see any way where professionalizing in the current model will work.
Yeah, it's interesting. And, you know, that's I guess, do you think it's more likely that what you outlined happens, or that there was a report in The Athletic last week or so that was speculating that there's some, you know, NFL folks and people high up in college athletics, such as yourself, but I'm not saying you're involved in this, that were pitching a more or less an 80 team super league, where it was all 70 of the current quote unquote power fives, and then mm-hmm. a promotion relegation system among the top 10 group of five schools every year, where they get promoted into super league.
I think, guys, and that's not to argue, you know, the merits of any model. I just, amongst the folks you're talking about, haven't heard any groundswell or anybody advocating for, I think a lot of speculation out there exists, and rightfully so, right? Yep. The popularity of what's been created over the last century is not dying easily. I just don't see that addressing and fixing what the desires are, and I think the needs of what the highest upper echelon blue bloods, the 30 or so that I'll call them, they're not concerned. You know, they're not concerned with the whole enterprise, even at a level that, you know, right. of what's being described. And a lot of that comes from, okay, how do we figure this out? What makes sense? What does, you know, this and that? Well, going that direction, it just perpetuates where we've been the last two or three years. We'll still be susceptible to litigation. Mm-hmm. You know, they'll still be sharing with those that at the highest level, they don't think equate to their levels. Right. So that's what caused a lot of this to begin with. So even though logistically and mathematically, that would be a revised version of keeping today's model intact, I don't see any appetite or hear much discussion or groundswell or lobbying within the industry for that.
Yeah. All right. Good to know. Yeah, we'll see. There's so much happening. See. Nobody knows. It's kind of a wild world. As it feels like it's been kind of nuts for the last two or three years now, but really eventually has. we'll reach some kind of stable ground, I'm sure.
Hopefully.
So, yeah. Yeah. Okay. Let's move on to the Hall of Fame weekend that's coming up this coming weekend, April 26th and 27th, Friday and Saturday. Mm-hmm. Let's take them one by one. We've got two separate days, two separate events. Friday the 26th, 6 to 10 p.m. in the Reynolds Center is the Blue and Gold Champions Night, which Matt and I have both been to in previous years. I know in previous years it's been super fun. There's been casino games, live music, yeah, silent auctions, live auctions. Is it what's it going to be like this year? Similar to past years? Is anything changing? What's it going to be like?
I think similar in this, you know, the focus is fun, fellowship, fundraising event. It's fun, it's festive, it's casual, but there'll be, you know, we'll have great entertainment, music, food, spirit, and fellowship that starts from 6 p.m. Friday night through 10. A little different, whereas we've had, I think, what, a Mardi Gras night year one, last year a casino night. This year is a kind of an interesting theme, and I'm just learning about it myself the last week. I happen to be married to one of the co-chairs, but she's learned to just give me information in increments. And so I'm just learning about it. But the theme really is a day in the life when folks, patrons come in to the Reynolds Center, you'll be assigned an escort and you do about a 20-minute experience. That's a day in the life of a student athlete.
Oh,
so you'll do everything. It'll be cool. So you'll have a host or hostess, which will be our student athletes, and you'll kind of be led to on a tour that stops and introduces all the things they do on a daily basis, from a video room right to the training room and the activities that go on there, both post practice and competition and both pre and post activities there. You'll go through our performance center, maybe asked to do a few dumbbells and things of that nature. Then the probably stop through the nutrition center and get some smoothies and a snack, meant for elite athletes, and then see locker rooms and things. So just really, really kind of getting firsthand experience and exposure into the day and life and routine of a Division I student athlete. From there, you'll then enter into the arena that's going to be dressed up. Each year it's kind of fascinating to see what we turn it into. But I've seen some early, just peeking in this week, it's taking shape pretty cool. It's going to be fun. And so there'll be lots of activities, food, music, auction, raffle items, of all varieties going on. We've got also our Hall of Fame class will be there being introduced and mingling with everyone. Coach Stubby Smith and his two Sweet 16 teams will be on hand. There's a lot of the great individuals have been selected for this class as well. So very excited about that. And then we'll transition Saturday night over to the Lorton Center, where we honor this year's class, the 2024 Hall of Fame class. So really, I believe it's year three of something we did by design, which is to create a full weekend, move to the spring instead of a piggyback onto one of our fall sports, and just really to focus and celebrate and pay homage to, you know, the greatest that TU has, and make that rather than an add-on opportunity, just to focus of celebration and bringing people back again. It's kind of an athletic homecoming, you know, unlike the university homecoming around a football game. This is an athletic homecoming that brings back people from all eras and our fans. And it's just an extra treat, and people seem to be getting the hang of it and enjoying it, and brings a lot of people back from out of town, out of state, hopefully yourself included. But it's just been fun, you know, and it's a dedicated celebration of TU athletics and its history.
Yeah, it really, I mean, I know I can speak for myself and Matt and probably everybody else listening that's been to the event. It is a blast. And I love the day in the life idea. Super cool.
Yeah,
I feel like
cool,
that's, yeah, it's great. I feel like that, you know, people have, I think, in the back of their minds, they generally maybe understand like what an athlete does on a day-to-day basis. But I don't think most people don't really concretely get it. Like, there's so much going on every single day.
Yeah.
Being a student athlete is a heck of a task on top of everything else. And yeah, I think that's really cool. And being able to show people that, and that'll be fantastic. And then you mentioned the athletic, kind of a homecoming for athletics. I remember the year I went, which was 2 years back. So many fun memories from that. I remember Justin Wright got up there and sang us like a guitar and sang a song. I don't know if that was planned. It kind of came out of nowhere. That was
Hurricane
super
Hank.
Cool. Hurricane Hank. That's right.
I nicknamed him Hurricane Hank that night.
Yeah. So good. And like he sounded fantastic. Like he actually plays music, writes songs. I didn't know that until then.
He sure did.
We also saw Philip Montgomery get up and dance with what I think was his wife's mother. I don't know. It was, he got up and danced. Everybody thought it was really cool. He did that for a while. It was great. Just really good memories from that event. I don't know if I can make this one, but I do miss, I miss attending. And I hope I can.
Well,
go
Matt will tune in, I'm sure.
Yes.
I'll do my best.
Yeah. But really a great event. And I think you described it really well, and it's open. Just let me clarify. It's open to everybody, correct? If you want to go.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's the whole intent, is it's us kind of outside of an athletic event, opening up, you know, from top to bottom, just the inner workings and history and really every, I mean, this kind of unique village that makes up TU athletics, and that includes our supporters and fans and those that can be part of it. And we've seen so many great, you know, this past couple of years, just as we've talked on other episodes of this about the importance of engaging our community, and that we don't limit that to the Tulsa community only. It certainly starts there and emanates from there, but you know, yourself included, from Denver or Kansas City or Texas or wherever folks might come from, and we'll have them from all those places and more, is that's what makes this place up. It's why a place that doesn't have the metrics, the numbers, the, you know, the huge student bodies and alumni bases and all those things to operate on Broadway, on the highest stage. We get to do that because we have this kind of interconnection to a great community and you know, that we live in, but also the TU community that extends far and wide.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that's super important. If you can go, I think you should go. It is really a heck
Please
of an
do.
Event. A lot of fun.
It will be my last one officially.
There we go. Exactly. Even more motivation to get out there.
I'll just be a ticket buyer the next go round.
Yeah, I'm sure. It is really a great event. Can't wait to see how it rolls out. Matt, you'll have to let me know. But The it's both nights, right? Are open to everyone, or is the second night open?
Yes,
to
both nights.
Okay,
yeah. Certainly are. Really great numbers already on what the crowd's going to be. It'll be a Friday night already, just because of the tickets purchased will be. I think we have over 450 already purchased.
Nice.
And we expect that to continue through the week and even grow before Friday. I expect expect a crowd well over 600 there. Lorton has got great capacity. I think almost 2,000 capacity. Had great response, in large part too, just because of the teams mm-hmm. being involved. Three different teams as well as the individuals. So it's going to be it's since we've started doing this spring format, this will without question be our most successful weekend of doing it.
Awesome. So we've got Champions Night on Friday, Hall of Fame dinner and induction ceremony on Saturday. Let's talk a little bit more about the Hall of Fame night for that induction ceremony. 6 to 9 p.m. That one's in the Lorton Performance Center. Who all's going in? If you have the list off the top of your head, I know some of them, so I can backfill. But well, if you've got them.
Starting with the teams, our 1960, very first champions in the track and field, and that's become commonplace right under Coach Gulley in the last 20-something years.
Yeah.
But those were our very first in our history. 1960 and 61 track teams nice. will be, and we have multiple living participants from that era, which will be great to see them. The other thing new this year is we created a special award, and this year's recipient of it, and it's the award's really to recognize someone that wasn't a coach or a Hall of Fame caliber athlete, but somebody that, whether it was a president of university, a athletic director, a special staff member, or somebody, in the community, that's done something remarkable as a supporter, just to open up the breadth of people that have made a difference. Sometimes they can't all be categorized as just a coach or an athlete. So we're opening up that legacy award, if we're calling it. And this year, the first recipient's really great, I think, who was still alive during my time as a student, not in this role, but was still, I think, a emeritus professor in the 70s, was Dr. Ben Henneke, who will be honored, our first legacy, Golden Legacy Award winner. Also, interestingly, besides being president, and he pretty much ran the gamut through being a dean, provost, then president, but as a student at the University of Tulsa, wrote the Hurricane Fight Song.
Oh, so, man. No
is
way.
Is that cool?
Wow.
Yeah.
That is fantastic.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah, I had no idea. Very nice.
One of our, in the sport of men's soccer, that played here in the early years and in the late 80s, early 90s, gone on to have a successful coaching career, and currently the head coach at Texas A&M of men's soccer, G. Gieri, will be inducted. Amy Krager, who was probably, guys, when you were in school, I think in the early teens.
Yeah, Amy looks Krager, like we had probably 1 year crossover there. We were there. We got there in 2013.
Well, I know Matt went to undergrad about 7 years, so he probably knows her better. But I'm teasing Matt. That's like my son, who had a 7.5 year undergraduate career. So, but Amy was one of TU's first team All-American in women's softball.
Nice.
Gary Collier, who's goes back to my time, was an integral part of the 94-95 Sweet 16 teams.
Yeah.
Will be inducted as an individual. And then I think a coach that probably doesn't get enough credit for after post my first tenure here in the late 90s and kind of the a down period of TU football in the early 2000s, really resurrected TU football, and yep. that led to, two decades of success. And that was Steve Craigthorpe as well. So Coach Steve will go in, and let's see if I miss anybody. Nope, that's it, that group. Dr. Henneke, G. Gieri, Steve Craigthorpe, Amy Krager, Gary Collier, and then our three teams, the 60-61 track team, and Tubby Smith and his two 1994, 95 Sweet 16 teams. And so Coach Smith will be back as he was when we inducted him 2 years ago.
He'll be there with, at the he'll be there on Saturday.
Will be,
very nice.
He'll be there both Friday and Saturday. And awesome. As well as a good majority of the team members. It's been fun and exciting just to see. They put me on a text thread with those guys from that era because I was their AD. And so just in the last month, I mean, finally I had to put a text on and say, guys, I know you're excited. We're excited for you. Take me off this damn thread because I'm still working. You guys are chatting all day long about this Hall of Fame weekend. And so, man, nice. You're talking about a group that's excited. I'm and thrilled and excited for them.
Oh man, that is so cool. Yeah, that is that's a stacked list right there. That is
it really is
a stacked group. I mean, you look at Gary Collier. That I was reading. Actually, I've got a highlight video of his up on my browser right now that I was watching before we started here. Still holds the school record for 93 three-pointers in one season. He hit that his senior year. That is pretty sweet. And yeah, obviously a couple awesome teams that he was on there. And then I totally agree with you on Steve Kragthorpe not getting enough recognition. Changing now, going to the Hall of Fame, that's great. But I was looking at him before we started recording as well, and 11 consecutive losing seasons before he was hired on, back-to-back mm-hmm. one-win seasons when he was hired, mm-hmm. and his first year we go 8-5, and it's like totally back to normal.
Yeah,
that is crazy. And then you got a conference championship in there during his tenure as well, and pretty fantastic stuff. So yeah, you look at that
pretty good stuff.
Lineup, that's awesome.
So you know, one little tidbit on that, so a lot of people won't realize this. People that didn't know or didn't see would assume Gary Collier was a shooting guard or a point guard, or Gary Collier was a 6'4", undersized postman.
Right.
That shot all those threes. So.
Yep. Pretty wild. That guy, you'd go, if you did that today's game, you're going number one in the draft. You know, if you're a big guy who can shoot the three like that, it's no question. You're lottery. That's wild. Very cool. Yeah, it should be an awesome event. Are there, I know you mentioned the tickets, two questions on those, I guess, to close this out. Are they the same price for each event? If not, what are they? And is that, if you want to go to both, are there like combo tickets that are discounted?
You know, I guess I need to get that. Gotta ask the chairman here, Brenda. So the Saturday Hall of Fame induction is $90. And Friday is 40, but the combined price is 110.
Oh, sweet. All right.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, that's great. Perfect. Okay. Good to know. So 90 for Saturday, 40 for Friday, or 110 if you want both.
Correct.
Yeah. Good stuff. Okay. Looking forward to seeing how that goes. I'm sure I'll see all kinds of photos online for it and have some serious FOMO from that, but it should be a hell of a weekend.
I'm expecting that Matt will be doing on the ground live reports so that we all get to keep up with. You know, actually, here's a cool thing. So I learned about a month ago that on the same night, I'm going to be being inducted into City of Tulsa's 100 Black Men Hall of Fame Friday night. So I'll be making, I know, who'd have thunk?
Yeah. Okay.
But it's actually a byproduct of we've been very active, and they even did a formal collaboration with the Dream Center and TU athletes. So we've been, I think, very effective and active champion for Black Wall Street, North Tulsa, and just being a good facilitator to saying, it's the entire city of Tulsa that are our teammates. And so that honor, I believe, is recognition of that. And,
good. Okay. So lost Rick for a second there. But you were talking about the work we've done with Black Wall Street and North Tulsa and things like that.
Yeah. That's really the kind of the thrust of why this award is not, although it's to me, but it's to me on behalf of TU athletics and TU student athletes. So
yeah,
thought that was kind of a neat thing to occur. And the challenge will be how to juggle both events Friday night, but I've got a very regimented itinerary for that night. So my job just to stick to it.
Sounds great. And I don't know if TU itself has a rule that the sitting AD can't be inducted into the TU Hall of Fame. But if they do, then next year I feel like you're gonna be a shoe in there. If not next year, then the year after. So looking forward to seeing that too.
Well, thanks, guys. Yeah. Always a pleasure. Yeah. Been genuinely every time these get put on my schedule, and I get to chop it up with you too. It's always a lot of fun because I'm also know you guys are doing us a great service and really the greater TU community out there of being a good voice and amplifier for us and what TU athletics is, activities and events and inner workings, all those things that help build, grow, and maintain the interest and support that we've had. You guys are an important part of that. So appreciate that and recognize that as well.
Yeah. Well, thanks for saying that. We'd do it either way, even if it had no impact, just like doing it, but I'm glad it seems to have some impact, here and there. Do you have to run or do we have time for a couple listener questions before you get going?
No,
it's totally absolutely fine. If not, if you got to go.
No, I'm in great shape. I'm in great shape here for the next 20, 30 minutes.
Sweet. All right. Okay. I probably won't be able to get to all of them, but we can at least hit some. So they're kind of all over the place. I guess before we get there, let's close out the Hall of Fame weekend thing. Was there anything else on that you wanted to, that we didn't get to that you wanted to call out?
I think we've covered most of it, certainly from the detailed standpoint. It's just really, I would just echo and say, repeat once again to folks, look, everyone's invited. We want, mm-hmm. we have great, great pride in our history, tradition, and this is a night and a weekend to get to celebrate it, but also not from a just sitting, observing, come engage with us, mingle with us, socialize with us, meet these Hall of Famers, see current student athletes. Look, one of the, I think, keys to why this place has persevered and has been resilient and remarkably successful and continues on is just because of that. Each of those aspects or categories of people I just mentioned are pretty exceptional. They're exceptional in their genuineness and their dedication, commitment to TU, and to see over time in history what they've accomplished in so many things and do it in a TU brand and way, which is really excelling not just in any one category, but across the board and really defining what it is to be a student athlete. So it's pretty unique model. Probably more than most. I've been around the country and know what exists other places. Yeah. It's a pretty special, unique place. And I would say to people, enjoy it, celebrate it, cherish it, and join in.
Yeah, sounds great. We've got a lot going on, stacked lineup. We've got a day in the life of a TU athlete. Should be a heck of a weekend. So if you can, get some tickets. They're very affordable, and get out there and see what's going on. Do you know if will DT be there if people want to, say goodbye to him also while they're there?
Absolutely.
Okay.
And probably hear some inside stories that only I know.
Ooh. All right. A little carrot before the stick right there. That's good stuff. Fantastic. Okay. And DT, if you're not aware, Don Tomkowski. Also, I don't know if we said this while recording
40 years.
Or before we started, but yeah, 40 years as TU's SID, Sports Information Director. He's retiring as well. I think June 31st I saw was his last, maybe no, it was May 31st was his last day.
Yeah, May 31st.
So yeah, two pillars of the TU athletics community, both stepping out their last blue and gold champions weekend. Or Hall of Fame weekend. So if you want to go say, hey, this is the time.
This is the time.
All right, let's move to some listener questions here. We'll start with one we got on Twitter from Nick Bouchart, and that is at NickBouchart1 on Twitter. And this is, I didn't even plan this segue, but I just talked about both of you. This is a question about you and DT. His question is, what will it be like for athletics to have to fill both the AD role and the SID role at the same time, replacing two pillars in the TU community? And I guess along with that, I will add, if you wouldn't mind, just talk a little bit about DT and what he's meant to the TU community and TU athletics and how you're going to replace him as well.
Yeah, you know, we did a press briefing yesterday to really kind of, you know, provide more detail and background to our announcement about the extension of our of Angie Nelp, our women's basketball coach. And then subsequent or prior to or post that, then, you know, do kind of a follow up to the announcement that was made about myself on Friday. And so one of the things I said in there to that group of full room of reporters, television as well, some radio guys too, was that, you know, that if you could point to any one thing, I know every university and athletic programs has their kind of iconic folks. And in our lineup and history at TU, especially modern history, the last 40 years, Don Tomkowski, DT, as he's known to us, is certainly one of those. And I throw that in with historic figures like a Glenn Dobbs, you know, a Dale McNamara, a Nolan, a Tubby, and others, you know, a Steve Craigthorpe, people like that, that have made a difference. DT, I think, more unlike the others that have been more out front and showcased because of their roles. His role was to be similar to mine, I guess, in a way, is to be behind that and always supporting and providing, you know, the best exposure, the best insights, the best relationships, you know, that helped really illuminate and showcase TU athletics for four decades. That's remarkable. That doesn't happen anywhere. I jokingly, because the office is right next to me, so coming in, whether it's him or me, first every morning, always greeting with good morning, Red Smith. And like to throw some of those out at him, you know, because he's from another era and time, and but just been remarkable. And I think it's probably been a great model for young people in his side of the industry coming up to, you know, to look at, even though the way it's done today versus from when he started, it's changed dramatically. Mm-hmm. The key to it, which has always been, you know, servant first oriented, showcasing our student athletes and programs and coaches, but also facilitating great relationships so that resulted in great exposure and coverage for this university. I mean, he's done that in all categories, you know, to the on a five-star way. So he'll be missed.
Yeah, agreed. And I haven't worked with him that closely while doing the Hurricast, but Matt, where I don't mean to put you on the spot too much here, Matt, but Matt was the sports editor for the Collegian back in our TU days. So I assume you got to work with him somewhat. If you wouldn't mind talking about just like, you know, what your level of involvement was with him and what he was like to work with, that'd be probably pretty cool.
Yeah, no, I mean, he was my go-to contact for pretty much anything. I came in on, I was friends with the business manager at the Collegian, and he was like, hey, our sports editor left, and this is like the second week of classes. So he was like, you should do it. And so I had no like media experience. I just kind of like jumped in and trial by fire. But DT
sounds like my AD career, Matt.
Yeah. And all I was told was like, oh yeah, you should probably email this guy. He'll get you press passes and stuff. And so that was when first time I emailed DT, and he was just an incredible resource to kind of, you know, I always felt like kind of a fish out of water when I'd go to like press conferences and things like that. But you know, I just leaned on him, and he was always, you know, incredibly helpful. And even like coming on when I reached out to him a couple of years ago, and I was like, hey, I don't know if you remember me from the Collegian, but now I'm doing this podcast and we'd love to, you know, start attending press conferences again and stuff. And he still remembered me from, you know,
that's great,
school days. So it was just been awesome to work with him, and I'm disappointed, but happy for him at the same time.
Yeah. You know, one of the neat things, guys, too, and I told this story yesterday to the in the media briefing, was so even from afar, whether I was in the Northwest or then all the years at Tulane, whether we were playing Tulsa directly or not, or just would pass each other, whether it was at a tournament setting or in an airport, you know, regardless of what team it was, if you saw two figures get off the bus, anyone that didn't know Tulsa specifically, and two figures get off the bus, then you knew instantly who it was. And that was Dr. George Mauerman and Don Tomkowski. And so for that, you know, that's kind of the symbolism of, you know, who he's been, is this university and its athletic program was as recognizable and known because of both of their service and presence for over four decades.
Yep, agreed. And replacing him will be a heck of a task, I'm sure. But yeah, a absolute pillar in the community, and very thankful for, man, 40 years doing the same job at the same place. That is so uncommon, especially these days. And that is really, really cool. So shout out to him. Yep. All right. Let's move on to some other questions here. We've got one from Matt McKell submitted on our website, and he's asking, what do you think happens with the transfer portal over the next few years? Feels like it's always changing. He's asking, will there continue to be changes, or do you think it will continue operating as it currently does?
I mean, the short history we have with it a couple of years now says it'll continue to evolve. We just announced this week the latest thing that's replacing some of the guide rails of the previous year, which was the student athletes could transfer any number of times, but
yeah.
After the first time, they were required to, like the old rule, provide a year in residence, meaning you had to sit out for a year if you transferred a second time. Well, that was eliminated this week.
Yeah.
So it's continuing to evolve, I think, and a lot of that's because, you know, it's something totally dramatically different we'd ever done for over 100 years. So in the first couple of years of it, there's a lot of unintended consequence aspects of this. And that's why you see the continued refinements and changes. And I think, you know, we've 2 years into it, probably got to, even though it may make it more transitional than we've ever dreamed it would ever be, it's probably smoothing out a little bit in terms of the process. Mm-hmm. And part of that is, you know, they're identifying windows, because when it first started, we joked about, you know, athletes that weren't content because of how their first half went going in at halftime and entering the portal, and if they got accepted, they could walk across the field and go to the other locker room and compete right for the other team. That's kind of where it was when we started. Now it's become a little bit more regulated in terms of the times of the year that you can do these things. So I think it'll keep evolving. Maybe not at the rate that it has these first 2 years, but they'll keep refining it as time goes by.
Yeah, agreed. And it needs to a little bit. You know, you mentioned those windows. I think the windows could be moved slightly to make them less chaotic, especially basketball. It's right in the middle of the NCAA tournament right now is the transfer portal window. And you got coaches out there who are trying to win the tournament, and half their players are talking to other coaches in the middle of the tournament. It's chaos out there. So I think that could be adjusted. You know, yeah.
Guys, just to add to that, I saw, I'll never forget this because it caught my attention on that Friday afternoon, the first chance I got to really turn into any of the March Madness. So the Friday afternoon of Sweet 16, and it was the lead-in show to the first afternoon game that Friday. Mm-hmm. 16 teams that would become four by the end of the weekend. And Jay Billis made the comment, if you think college sports is, you know, what your father, mother, or grandfather knew, here's, you know, digest this. We have 16 teams vying for the championship. Currently, those 16 teams have 37 student athletes in the portal.
Yeah.
And they're the ones playing for the national championship.
Right. Yep. Different world, man. I mean, people, yeah, it's crazy, you know? And I'm not saying I'm against it or anything like that. I think there are benefits. Obviously, there are clear benefits of it. But there's a lot of chaos that happens as part of it as well. And that'll, you know, like you're saying, I think that'll get smoothed out over time. It's just part of the transition. But yeah, it's pretty weird. Another question from Matt McKell from the website. This is a big one. I don't know. You can take this any way you want, I suppose. But the question is pretty simple, but it's very large. How do you hope to be remembered as an athletic director or as a person?
gosh. Well, I haven't given thought to that, but and I don't know that that's going to vary, obviously, right, for whoever the beholder is. I would say this is that for the people that I served, which were always began with the student athletes I was responsible for and extended to coaches, athletic staff. And then beyond that, campus communities, fans, the rest of it is none of us are, to my knowledge, the best in any of those instances, but somebody that always put those stakeholders and folks first. I can't tell you a day where my own interests ever kind of came on my radar as to something I should be concerned with or invest time and energy in. So, regardless of my level of success, I never detoured from that outlook that that was my role. That's who I am. That's who I'm responsible for. And even within that group, I always put student athletes at the top of that. As I said to our group on Friday, I never aspired to be the drum major or somebody at the front of the parade, but to be the person at the back, applauding, cheering, and knowing I'd done something right and to help you have that parade. That was my goal. And certainly it didn't always turn out that way, but it never defined it so much by that outcome as that we put in and convinced enough others to follow a path and journey that allowed that to happen as part of their experience and just be a good shepherd. That's really, if I just said two words, good shepherd. I did my best to guide, protect, and support those I was responsible for.
Yeah, I think that hits the nail on the head too with, it goes back to a comment you made earlier where you're not the one throwing the ball, you're not the one rowing the boat, but you're making all those things happen kind of in the background, or you're at least helping get those things going in the right direction. And I think that's been the through line of your career is in my opinion, taking over at least in some situations that weren't very good, and like getting them back on the right track, putting the work in that needs to happen to get that done. And look on the other side, and things are always better when you look back than when you took over. So, I think that resonates well with me, and very well done. It's pretty awesome.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah, of course, of course. So let's get to there's a bunch. I'll ask one more on this. We got too many questions on stuff like this, but kind of the last one related to it. Comes from Twitter as well, and it's from at W Fertz, and he asks, "What does TU have to do to remain playing football at the highest level possible?" And he's thinking along the lines of things we've discussed a little bit already, like P5 breakaway, or even your 30-40 team breakaway, relegation, a G5 playoff, things like that. But where does TU need to, what does it need to do, and where does it need to position itself to keep playing at a high level?
I think, we've probably refined and returned ourselves to a kind of a model that says, very openly that we can be as good as our community and allows us to be. And by that I mean not only our internal community of athletics and the campus of TU and alums, but certainly the the Tulsa community, surrounding community, and the greater TU community that, as you guys know, because you're part of it, extends beyond boundaries. And so as long as we stay and I think reflect what the values and aspirations of that community are, and do it in a very efficient and deliberate, but resilient way, we'll, I mean, our history says that we'll be, you know, we'll be right in the thick of it. That's who we are, and that's who we've always been, and I think that's who we'll continue to be, even though the landscape's changing faster and more dramatically than it ever has. I think we'll be part of it. There's no doubt in my mind we'll be part of it, and but we've got to stay true to that, to that code and that formula, and I think. We're doing that again. I think continuing to do that and even enhancing it is really the key as the stakes go up, which they are as we speak.
Yep. Agreed. I know we're running low on time, so I'm going to close with these two questions from Palmer Watkins at the Palmski on Twitter. Longtime listener and good friend. He went to school with me and Matt. He is asking first, where are we regarding future facility improvements? He specifically called out indoor practice facility, which I know is always on everybody's mind, but maybe talk about that one and then anything else that's on the plate.
So it's interesting, guys, because we've had, there's some active conversations, and I actually expect there'll be some announcements regarding future development and whether that mean whatever that means, right? But it characterized it this way, seeing I think there's going to be some significant announcements between now and the fall.
All right.
That speak directly to some epic and even historic levels of support for TU athletics. Then how we direct that or distribute it, it's really a different challenge. And actually, for the first time in my career, asking myself is, you know, I've always said since I've returned, and it wasn't rocket science, what's the one missing gap in our deck of facilities and things needed to support our student athletes? Has been the indoor practice facility. Although I would say we've got a little thing we're going to unveil here of our renovation of what's been known as the hot box, our little indoor inside maybe center that people won't even recognize. We did a beautiful makeover. Matt, if you're around between Friday and Saturday, I'll give you a quick tour, but you wouldn't even recognize it. But it's improved dramatically. I call it our mini indoor, our 45-yard indoor facility for nine of our sports to be able to use. But to recognize it from what all of us had always known, old maybe Jim, what it is right now, which kind of took some pressure off of not having any adequate or safe indoor facilities. We do have one now, and it's pretty remarkably made over. That being said, there's still the need for a long-term full-service indoor facility. Now, that being said, with the prospect of some of these announcements that I believe will come up, counting on them coming up, whether it's before I leave or before fall, because we're at the closing point on them, is what is the best investment? Would that be things that are, you know, whereas there is no question before there was that facility need, is that there's more questions today, because do we invest more in the case fund, for example, or in any of the funds that help retain, reward our student athletes? Is that a better expenditure in today's climate than to in a bricks and mortar project?
Yeah.
Because I don't know in today's time, if you have adequate facilities, we have more than adequate, then most student athletes' outlook and care and concern are, what's the most robust package of support you can provide us?
Totally.
So it's going to pose, not so much for me, but for my successor and others, it's going to pose some different concerns and thoughts and deliberations than I had to deal with, because that's real. Is if you polled student athletes anywhere and say, hey, would you rather be somewhere where you have this new facility or somewhere that has a package or retention package or something that helps directly impact you?
Yep. Yep. So, and I think a lot of the time the answer is going to be, I'll take the money. I'll take the bigger NIL package.
That's kind of the indicators that we've been seeing.
Yeah, for sure. I've got a specific person in mind too. But yeah, it is interesting, you know, like, yeah, you know, you asked me that question last year and I would have said, you know, nothing is more important than an indoor practice facility. And I really didn't think about, I don't know, that was a good call out. You know, if you have an influx of money now, maybe the calculus changes a little bit, because now there is a little more leeway for the university itself to be involved in NIL. And that is kind of part two of Palmer's question of like, how is the NIL structure at TU improved over your tenure? But obviously you've kind of overseen the entire thing. What is the overall outlook right now in your mind for NIL?
So I think the important thing for people to understand is so that case, the Alston case, and that litigation, the resolution of that was twofold. One was to acknowledge that the universities can no longer prohibit the ability of student athletes to profit from their name, image, likeness, right? And that's the one that garnered the most attention, obviously. The second part of the Alston litigation was the Alston Fund that was created, which is an academic enhancement, a scholarship enhancement, that said, you know, you guys have been calling this full athletic scholarship grant and aid for over a century, a full grant and aid, and it's really not. Right. There's a gap. The gap that was settled was two things. Was one, a $6,000 additional scholarship enhancement, and then the cost of attendance on top of that. At the University of Tulsa, those two components add up to $10,500 per student that they can now realize. That's why we started the case fund. In our first year of it, we raised $2 million for our student athletes. All 470 were eligible to receive. They had to earn it, which is kind of a neat component. We've seen a remarkable uptick in a number of our sports, including our football, who had its highest GPA in 26 years. Yeah. It's crazy.
Yeah.
And so I'm a huge proponent of that. We're one of only 50 schools in the country doing that. The second part then is the outsourced part, formation of the collectives. We now have one. We're about 18 months into it, called Hurricane Impact, run by some great, credible professionals that happen to be former TU student athletes.
Right.
And they're in the space of investment fund and fund management, those things. Our board signed off on it. Our president has, which is critical because it's a third party. And I think at the end of this year, we'll be approaching close to $1 million in that. So the combination of those two things is, you know, that was something that when I came to begin with, wasn't even on the horizon, right? It wasn't even something that was occurring anywhere. So we've established in about 18 months time that we can probably, that's a pretty good first step for student athlete support at the University of Tulsa, over 3 million combined. I anticipate it will grow and needs to grow going forward to stay relevant. And then hopefully outside of us is there'll be, you know, some aspect of regulation come along that levels out how that happens. It's not sustainable how it's working right now. And even those at the very top would tell you, you know, is that, look, if we're going to evolve into a professional model, this being amateurs at it isn't a very good approach.
Right.
And it's very unregulated, not monitored, not being managed in a sustainable way. And that has to change for everybody's sake, including the student athletes.
Yeah, makes sense to me. Lots to do there. I'm sure lots to come in the news shortly. So we'll see what happens. But Yeah, good stuff. I know you've got to run, so you can give a one word answer to this one. We got a final one. Barstool Tulsa on Twitter is asking about baseball, and he added like seven pleases out there. He wants to know if we're getting a baseball team. You can say a yes or a no, or maybe a maybe. But what do you think about baseball? Or no comment.
I love it. I love baseball. But it's probably not on the immediate horizon.
Yeah.
Not to say there may be some things evolve. I'd say stay tuned. I don't know that baseball is on the front burner, but there may be some things evolve that open the conversation or reignite the conversation of that down the road, but it's definitely down the road.
Yep. Awesome. Sounds good. All right. We will leave it there right on the nose at 6 o'clock here. Rick, got to say it, man. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast. Always being so welcoming to us, to the TU community at large. You're throughout your whole time as AD. It's been awesome. I'll tell you, we're friends with several other like AAC podcasters and such. And they're always so surprised and impressed that you are so generous with your time as an AD and come on our show and do the things that you do. So thank you very much. Really appreciate your friendliness and your just general welcomeness to us and everybody. So thank you for your energy, your time, your loyalty to TU.
I've loved it with you guys and getting to know you guys better. And I'm going to end it with, always thought about this and I'm going to do it. And this is the only time I've done it, or the first time. I may use it again here down the stretch, but there was a iconic person, my first tenure at TU, that I got to call on, that I had huge respect for. I'd never met him until the early 90s when I made a fundraising call to New Orleans. And one of our iconic greats, who's in the NFL Hall of Fame and certainly TU Hall of Fame and many others, Jim Finks, who came to be renowned as was a great athlete, but more renowned as a general manager for multiple, you know, New Orleans Saints, Chicago Bears, even did a baseball stint, I believe, with the Chicago Cubs. And he nice. His farewell book, I met him at in the latter part of his life in the early 90s, was, I think the title was, "It's Been a Pleasure."
Yeah.
So I'm going to end with that.
Been a pleasure. Hey, it's been our pleasure as well. That is a good way to end it. Thank you very much, man. And hopefully we can have you on again, like you mentioned, and
oh yeah,
talk about what's next for you and what you're doing. So looking forward to that.
I'll just be average Joe TU fan.
Future TU Hall of Fame inductee, I am sure. So we will we'll talk about that next time it happens.
Thanks, guys.
All right. Thanks, Rick. Have a nice night. See ya.
Bye-bye.
All right. And thanks again to Rick Dixon, outgoing Tulsa athletic director, here in a couple months. I think he said he's got 60 or 70 more days on the job or something like that until he's officially out the door. But yeah, the transition process starts now, I suppose. I assume they're already looking for the next one, which is kind of wild. They've got plenty of time to do it. But yeah, really appreciate him coming on as always. Hopefully we do get to talk to him again going forward. And if you want to talk to him, go to the Blue and Gold Weekend, the Hall of Fame weekend coming up this weekend, April 26th and 27th. We'll try to have this episode out by the 25th, which is Thursday. And yeah, please go. Matt and I have both gone in the past. It's a ton of fun. I really enjoyed the time I went. Tickets are very affordable, $40 for the Blue and Gold night on Friday, and $90 for the Hall of Fame induction ceremony on Saturday, and $110 if you want to get to both, combo ticket. So go check it out. Matt, anything to add before we close this thing down, or you want to end it here?
No, I think the only is I didn't mention it during the interview, but at some point I am going to make sure to ask Rick to put in a good word for us for the next AD, so that we can have Rick on at a regular cadence, as well as whoever the acting athletic director of Tulsa is, just because I feel like it's been really fun. And I hope that, you know, TU is the kind of school where we can kind of maybe count on that, or as that's what it's kind of felt like. The fact that, you know, Rick has been so approachable and has like reached out to us, the fact that Coach Conkle like reached out about wanting to do it, like I'm really hoping that that continues. So excited to see who they hire. I think it'll be a very fun process.
Yeah, likewise. And I think that's best case scenario is we get somebody as welcoming as Rick, you know, because that was not the case under Derek Gregg. And, you know, we didn't know him very well. We were also a much smaller podcast at the time and didn't really know what we were doing. So I don't super blame him for not reaching out, but he was not the outgoing spirit necessarily that Rick Dixon is and has been. So man, if we get somebody like Rick again, I'll be over the moon.
Yeah. And the only other thought that I had is, you know, maybe we'll have to talk to him about his schedule. This used to be a 3-person podcast, so we could go back.
Yeah. Oh man. How awesome would that be? Oh man. Yeah. Permanent Golden Hurricanes co-host Rick Dixon. That'd be nuts. Oh, good stuff. All right, let's close it out there. Thank you everybody for listening to the show. If you made it all the way to the end, appreciate you. If you're not already, hit the follow button on your podcast player. You'll get notifications whenever we put new episodes out, which will happen here and there over the summer, but not every week again until football comes around. While you're there, leave a rating and a review. Really do help. That's how people find the show. The higher rated we are, the better we show up in those podcast players when people search things like Tulsa Sports and stuff like that. If you leave us a written 5-star review, we will read it on our next episode of the show. So do that. Would really appreciate it. We do all of this totally for free. We don't have ads in the show. We don't try to make money other ways. Really, everything is pretty much from you guys. So if you want to help us out financially, you can do that. Go to the website, thegoldenhurricast.com/supports. We've got a few ways you can help out there. And finally, follow us on Twitter /X at Golden Hurricast. You can submit a question for the show there or on our website at thegoldenhurricast.com. If you don't want to do either of those, still want to get in touch, shoot us an email. That email address is thegoldenhurricast@gmail.com. Thank you again, everybody, for listening. And we will talk to you at some point over the summer, I assume, with when news comes out and whatnot. But at the very latest, we will talk to you in the fall for football season.
Stay golden. Hurricast.